At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
This week's episode of A Cast of Kings is brought to you by Hover. Hover is the best way to buy and manage domain names. When you have a great idea, you want to secure a great domain name for it. You want something catchy and memorable. Hover gives you exactly what you need to find the perfect domain for your idea. And this week, we have a special offer code. You can get 10% off your first purchase by going to hover.com/kingbeyond. Hover.com/kingbeyond. Now, John Robinson, you chose all of our Hover promotional codes for the season. So why King Beyond? What was your intention behind that?
For this week, King Beyond refers to King Beyond the Wall, which is Mance Rayder's title. So that was chosen in honor of Mance's big moment at the end of this episode. Some of my other codes later in the season are guesses. So we'll see how well they line up.
We'll see how well the guess. Yeah, this will be a pleasure for people to listen to. Like, does the code match up or not?
Yeah, exactly.
Or are you going to be incredibly embarrassed?
But this week I nailed it.
You nailed it. So hover.com/kingbeyond. Check them out for all of your domain name needs. Hello, everyone, and welcome to A Cast of Kings, an unofficial podcast about the HBO original series Game of Thrones. I'm David Chen, and shockingly enough, after all these years, I still have not read any of the books in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire.
And I'm Joanna Robinson, and since George R.R. Martin has not published any more books, I still have read every single book in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. What we do here on A Cast of Kings is we will spoil everything through this week's episode of Game of Thrones. But we will not spoil anything from future week's episodes of Game of Thrones. That includes anything in leaked, torrented episodes or in the next time on preview of Game of Thrones. You can find more of our episodes at gameofthronespodcast.com. You can also email us at acastofkings@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook at Twitter at acastofkings. This week we'll be spoiling everything through Season 5, Episode 1, The Wars to Come. Which this episode was written by Weiss and Benioff and was directed by Michael Slovis. And so that's what we're doing here on A Cast of Kings. Jonah Robinson, it's been a while since we recorded an episode. It's certainly been a long while since we did a recap. How do you feel today?
I'm feeling great. I'm so excited to
be
back.
We are so excited. It's ridiculous. My excitement for this podcast and this show has grown exponentially every single year. I remember after the first year, I almost jumped off the ship. Do you remember that?
You sure did.
We almost like terminated the show, but we are back and I am like, I'm at a really good place mentally with the podcast. I love this show. Love talking with you about Game of Thrones and love all of the listeners. So we really appreciate it. We should also point out that this season we have corporate sponsorship throughout the whole season. So really grateful to all of our sponsors. And if you guys can patronize their wares, it would help us to do the show again next year for sure. It would guarantee us another season of Cast of Kings. So keep an eye out for our mentions of them. And I guess before we begin our discussion of this week's episode, Jonah Robinson, it might be worth mentioning that there was a major news event in the last 48 hours. Game of Thrones was put on torrent sites, the first four episodes of the show.
That's right.
And I think you have strong opinions on this, right?
I do, mostly because they're obviously from... So I got news is actually before any of the major news site broke, one of our listeners let me know that this had happened. And the original story I heard was that it was 6 episodes.
Wow.
Later found out it was 4 episodes, which is a little bit better, but also worse because it means it definitely came off of screener discs sent out to either media or other places.
Yeah, so for context, people who work in legitimate media, like Joanna Robinson, for instance, get screener copies on DVD of the show before it airs. So in this case, they usually send out 3 or 4 episodes. In this case, it was 4 episodes.
Right. And each episode, each episode on each disc was watermarked with like a serial number.
Right.
And you can see on screen caps from the leaked episodes that the watermark was scrubbed, but it was definitely at one point there. So, yeah, it's really disappointing actually to me. And I've been pretty vocal about that on Twitter, you know, and I don't mean to sit here in my tower and be like, it's okay for me to get the first three, four episodes, but not for you people. But, you know, it's stealing. I understand people who pay for HBO feel like, well, I would have gotten it eventually, so it's not stealing. There's a number of ways you can justify it, and that's fine. But I guess most of all, I'm disappointed that we're not going to have the same week by week discussion about these four episodes as we usually would. I told Dave I'm really worried about spoilers. I was on Tumblr earlier today. I typed in a character name into Tumblr Game of Thrones and was bombarded with images from like the fourth episode.
Wow.
You know, so I don't know how anyone can go around on the internet, or it's going to be harder, much harder to protect yourself from spoilers for those four episodes. So
right. Right. But I mean, you know, this is a danger that non-book readers have been living under for years.
How do you like it now? No.
Yeah. How do you like me now, Joanna Robinson? Yeah. I mean, this is the Damoclean sword that's been hanging over non-book readers for quite some time. So you were quite upset about it because you were worried that, you know, some harm would befall me in spoiler form. And for me, that has always been a risk. And so it's not like a brand new risk now. I think perhaps you are feeling it acutely, Joanna Robinson, because the show is diverging heavily from the books now, right? So perhaps there is more potential that even book readers can get spoiled now.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Book readers have already been spoiled. So
I think in the grand scheme of things, okay, it kind of sucks. I mean, HBO's Game of Thrones is one of the most pirated shows
right.
on the internet. And so that just sucks to begin with. But they actually worked pretty hard to make it so that people would have legitimate avenues. They've really worked hard to make sure people have a legitimate avenue to watch it.
HBO Now,
you pay $15 bucks a month. You don't even need to have cable. You can get Game of Thrones. They made it so that Game of Thrones premiered in 170 countries simultaneously, right? Which is not usually something that's done. In that situation, it's like, okay, it's almost understandable in that case. There's spoilers out there. People in the U.S. have watched it. And if you live in some country that doesn't get it, you know, that it's almost understandable that you would want to get it somehow while everyone else in the world is watching it. But guys, there's almost no excuse now, right? They're debuting it everywhere or many places, many countries. They're making it available on HBO Now. So I do hope that if you listen to this podcast, you have a way of watching the shows legitimately. People have asked me, are you going to watch the four episodes? And even if I was going to obtain them, I decided it would mess with the dynamic of the show. I mean, the whole purpose of listening to Cast of Kings is hearing Dave Chen hopelessly funnel around with plot details that he cannot grasp at all and not understand what's going on and make horrible guesses about the future. So I don't want to deprive listeners of that joy.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, listen, we all do things. So, of course, I'm not going to judge you forever if you torrent these shows and watch them. But just be mindful in our comments section around about our spoiler policy, which you guys are well aware of. If you ask me a question on Twitter about a future episode, I'm not going to usually I answer people. I'm not going to answer you. I'm just going to ignore you until we catch up because – Not cool.
All right. So anyway, it was a very brazen leak that happened like right before the show aired. So worth mentioning. And in terms of money going to Time Warner and HBO, whatever. I think the people who made the show wanted it to be experienced in a certain way, and we should try and honor that if we can. But let's dive into this episode, General Robinson. So this episode begins with a flashback. And I think it's the first flashback we've ever seen in the show, if I'm not mistaken. Right,
yeah. They filmed one, actually, for season one. And you can't really see the footage, but you can see some screen caps of it online. But there is a flashback starring Sean Bean that was filmed for season one and never used.
Fascinating.
But this is the first time it was actually used in the show. So big departure for them.
Actually, I should say, even before we get to the flashback, that opening credits.
Yeah.
Any remarks about that? I think the one thing that I noted was that Winterfell now has the House Bolton sigil.
Yeah, it's right? So sad. I mean, so Winterfell for a couple seasons, I think, was sort of this burned out husk.
Right.
So that was sad in and of itself. But now it's rebuilt with the Flayed Man on top. And that's, I don't know, somehow even worse.
Right. We all know how terrible the Flayed Man is. So, it's sad. And we saw Pentos. But I believe we had actually seen Pentos before on the show, if I'm not mistaken. We just hadn't seen it for many, many seasons.
In the pilot. We saw it in the pilot.
Yeah, yeah. So and then like not at all again.
Right.
So so we saw Pentos. And anything else remarkable? I think that's most of the notable elements about the opening.
Yeah.
So anyway, we get to this flashback. Now, did you know when you saw the flashback that was Cersei in the flashback?
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, because I knew it was coming. So.
What do you mean you knew it was coming? Like, in the book, how did it play? Was it a flashback in the book? Like,
well, no, I frequent Game of Thrones casting information sites and stuff like that. So I knew that they
so-and-so
had cast
as young Cersei.
As young Cersei, exactly. Well, did you know based on hairstyle?
Yeah, I did know just because the hairstyle is exactly a match for Lena Headey and what she has on. So,
what's funny is if you go back and watch season one, they hadn't figured out the wigs yet, and so Lena Headey has to wear these really awfully elaborate braided horrible wigs from season one. You can go see them. Sansa had to wear them too. and then like in the subsequent seasons, they're like, oh no, this is obviously Cersei's look, and that's what she's worn ever since, basically. So in my cobbling it together, basically Cersei has had the same hairstyle her whole life, except for that 1 year when the Starks came to King's Landing and she thought she'd mix it up a little with some braids.
In your mental reconstruction of Cersei's hair life.
Which is something I think about a lot.
Yeah, no, why wouldn't you? It is amazing. So then we get the scene where she goes to visit this witch to tell her the future.
Right.
And here's a question I had for you. This is a question that – this is a Jenna Robinson question that came to mind when I was watching this. She says, I thought you had like cat's teeth. For instance, and you look weird in this way. And in fact, she just looks like a normal human that's a little bit more filthy than usual. In the book, does she actually have cat's teeth?
She's hideous in the book.
Yeah.
She's called Maggie the Frog. She's supposed to be older and, your vision of a typical like a horrifying crone. And I don't know if it's just like sort of, hey, we're HBO. We like pretty people or what. But I thought she was quite cute.
Right. Yeah. She looked like she would have cleaned up nicely.
Yeah, in a drinking blood sort of way.
Yeah. But I bring that up because in the past, the show has been known to insert references like that, where, for instance, like with Tyrion and his scar in the book, I believe his nose is cut off, and they reference it by saying, "Oh, I heard your nose was cut off," but it wasn't actually cut off in the show.
Right. Right.
So here she's like, "I thought you had cat's teeth, and you looked ugly," and in fact. My guess was that was how it was in the book. So was I the first Dave Chen prediction of the season vindicated then?
Wow. You nailed it.
I am so on top of it this season. All right. So, then she gives the, prophecy, she wants to know her future and Maggie the Frog says everyone wants to know their future and until they know their future, which is a very astute comment.
Right.
And a few interesting, factual nuggets she drops, right? Firstly, she says that you'll have 20 children and or your husband will have 20 children and you'll have 3.
Right.
So this is a reference to Robert Baratheon, who I guess had 20 bastard children.
Right.
And she has 3, who we've all seen in the show.
Right.
I think she was also saying like how she was supposed to marry Prince Rhaegar, I believe.
Right. Right.
And that didn't come to pass.
Right.
And then finally, there were a couple of remarks on, gold will be their crowns and gold their shrouds.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? What do you make of that, Jenna Robinson? What is she referring to there? Or are we supposed to know yet?
Well, I mean, I think, gold will be their crowns has that fun double meaning of, they're known for their blonde hair. That was part of a big season one plot was the Lannister children and their blonde hair. And also that, Joffrey wore a gold crown, Tommen wore a gold crown, will Marcella wear a gold crown? We don't know. And then gold will be their shrouds. They don't say it in this, but I think I can't quite remember, but I think it's indicated in the book, that at least Joffrey dies before Cersei, that she will see at least one of her children die, you know?
Right. Well, what does that have to do with gold being their shrouds then?
Just a reminder that they'll die. Not necessarily the color of their shroud, but that they will die.
I see. Well, then, I don't know. That sounds pretty inaccurate as a prediction. But no, fair point that it is a chilling reminder of their mortality.
There's a weird thing, though. In the show, they had – I don't know if you remember this from season one. It's like decently obscure. But Cersei tells Catelyn Stark that she had a black-haired baby by Robert Baratheon and that the baby died. And I believe this was a show invention and not
right.
a book story.
Right.
So when Maggie the Frog is like, you'll have three children and Gold will be there, you know, like, I think they're just retconning that whole like show invented. I had a child by Robert Baratheon and it died, you know, because right. it's you can't really, Maggie the Frog can't be like, you'll have three children, Gold will be their crowns. Also one with black hair, it will die very early, very sad.
Right.
It doesn't flow on the prophecy. So
yeah. Agreed. They needed to make it more poetic, so they eliminated that. Or you could read it that Cersei was lying to Catelyn Stark when she told her that.
Absolutely possible. Would not put it past Cersei, for sure. Yeah.
So that was in season one, right, if I recall correctly.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's more to the prophecy in the books, and it's, I won't talk about what it is at all, but it's interesting that they left it out. This is one, you know, the reason I bring it up is because every time they leave something out, then a book reader will go like, oh, then is that not important to the end game? I thought that was important. I guess it's not, you know?
Right.
So book readers are like, oh, I guess that thing is, you know, it's like if you listen to the Harry Potter prophecy and half of it just like didn't end up meaning anything at all, you know? And so you're like, oh, maybe that doesn't mean anything.
Or they'll introduce it.
Maybe they'll do another flashback
later
or,
in a different way.
You know, a different way. Exactly. So.
It is interesting that they did a flashback because the show has invested so heavily in people talking about the past.
Right.
But I guess they just decided, hey, sometimes it's more effective to just see it.
Well, I think I don't think this is a spoiler to talk about, just to say that Weiss and Benioff did say in the sort of post Game of Thrones special that they do on HBO, the like 2 minute inside the episode thing.
Yep.
That they really wanted to put a strong focus on Cersei at the beginning of this season. They wanted to kick it off with a strong Cersei focus. And so they thought it was important to give her that.
I did see that, although I feel like that's technically in the spoiler range, Joanna. But fair enough. I think it's they're trying to set the tone for the whole season, basically.
Right.
So not giving you a hard time, just...
No. It's a fine line to walk. I understand.
Just laying out what I think the ground rules are. That's all. So, but I think the key component of the prophecy, which we haven't mentioned, is we now learn why she's so hateful and insecure against Margaery.
Right. She gets like a Snow White type prophecy of like, you will not always be the fairest of them all in the kingdom. There will be someone younger and fairer than you who will take your place. So.
Yeah. So then cut to present day where she goes to Tywin's funeral or visits, you know, Tywin's the area that he's in.
The sept. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where they had that, you know, erotic scene last season.
I know. Were you nervous that there would be another sort of...
They're going to do it like on his dead body.
Another dead body sexual encounter.
I wouldn't put that past the show for sure. But fortunately, that didn't happen.
He never wanted you to be a king's guard, but here you are, protecting his dead body.
What he built, it's ours. He built it for us, he meant it for us. They're going to try to take it away, all of it.
They?
All of them out there are enemies.
They're waiting in line to make sure he's really dead, and as soon as they see the stones on his eyes, they'll set to work on tearing us apart.
They have nothing to do with it. The man who murdered our father, he tore us apart. He's the enemy. I've been telling you for years, you've been defending him for years.
This is exactly what they want.
And now our father is dead. And that little monster is out there somewhere drawing breath.
Cersei is pretty pissed because, I mean, she... I don't know if she thought in her heart of hearts that Tyrion was responsible... for Joffrey's death, but she certainly didn't like Tyrion and was using Joffrey's death as an excuse, at least, to get him out of the picture. So the idea that Tyrion would, you know, take out her father, who is someone that she does care about, despite his some of his behavior,
right.
You know, I think that really struck a chord with her, and she's obviously very upset about it.
And the fact that Jamie's the one who let him out.
Right.
Which is double betrayal.
I guess I feel like she was really pissed in the scene, but I feel like one would be even more pissed than that if that was actually what had happened. I don't know. Then again, Cersei has generally been able to keep good control even when she's incredibly pissed and hateful. So
right.
It certainly fits with the character. But just like she's definitely seething with rage in the scene. And yeah, so I thought it was just a continuation and exploring the implications of Tyrion's actions from last season. Anything else to say about the scene, Joanna?
Yeah, I did want to say, I mean, I will fight you if you tell me this is a spoiler, because point of view characters die all the time in Game of Thrones. But this is the first book, this season's covering the fourth and fifth books. This is the first book where Cersei is a point of view character. This is the first time we're inside her head. And it's also kind of, if you don't count Jamie in the last book, but Jamie was kind of a good guy in the last book, this is the first time kind of a villain is a point of view character. So it's really interesting. I mean, the reason Game of Thrones and A Song of Ice and Fire are interesting is because you don't really have, with a few exceptions, you don't have dyed-in-the-wool villains and heroes, right? The book works hard to get inside the head of these villains so you can understand at least the source of their motivation for all the crappy things they do. Like Joffrey aside, who's just an evil little monster, right?
Right.
So I just think it's interesting that we have that turn in this book towards being inside the head of such an unlikable character.
Right.
Yeah.
So then why don't we just talk about the whole Tyrion storyline at this point? Because it does cut back to it. But Tyrion ends up in Pentos with Varys. Some great point of view shot from the crate. Like really interesting editing and shooting there. This episode was directed by Michael Slovis, who used to be director of photography on Breaking Bad and actually directed a few episodes of Breaking Bad, if I recall correctly. And so whenever a cinematographer becomes a director, I'm always looking out for, is this episode really well lit? And I have to say, this is some of the best lighting I've seen in a Game of Thrones episode. I mean, just everyone looks amazing in every single scene. It's generally a well-lit show, but I thought it was exceptional for this episode.
Now, you wouldn't notice that if you torrented a crappy rip of a screener.
What was amazing is apparently some people are complaining about the quality of those screeners on the torrent sites, which which is understandable because you get DVDs, which are not HD, right?
The screeners are notoriously crappy. That's just what they are.
Right.
And then most of us end up watching the show again when it airs in high definition.
Right. So they are purely utilitarian.
Yeah.
For plot. Viewers. Right.
Oftentimes it's like substandard definition. It's just, it's grainy and awful. And you're just like getting the basic bones of the plot down.
This is either a really good encouragement to not watch the torrented files or the ultimate humble brag, Joanna Robinson.
Is it? Okay.
One or the other, maybe both. So they arrive in, Tyrion arrives in Pentos. Great, hilarious, like great Tyrion dialogue as usual.
And Varys too.
I had the opportunity to watch this episode with a bunch of Microsoft employees. And the scene where he vomits wine and then starts drinking again got a huge laugh out of the whole crowd. Nice. Which, by the way, is amazing. Like, it's great to watch Game of Thrones with a crowd, by the way.
Yeah.
Just a very enjoyable experience. So, so they have this talk about, Varys kind of delivers a summary about the path that's led them to this point.
Yeah.
And how Varys and others supported a Targaryen restoration. Now, I don't recall the Targaryen restoration. Is this something that has been prominent in past seasons, Joanna Robinson?
No, and I don't even know if that phrase has been used in the show before.
Right.
But I mean, anyone can figure out what it means, which is that, put the Targaryens back on the throne, get rid of the Baratheons and the Lannisters, and put the Targaryens back in power. So.
Right, which is interesting. Well, firstly, the proximate cause of the events of the show is the murder of Jon Arryn by what we learned last season was Littlefinger, right?
Right.
So it's not like Varys was the one that instigated the changes that led to the Targaryen restoration. But it's also interesting that it was a major plot point in season one that they try and kill Daenerys Targaryen.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, and that's inconsistent in the book as well, because Varys reveals that he is part of the Targaryen restoration. And then you think back and you're like, wait, wasn't he the one who told, you know, Robert right. that she was pregnant?
This is like a whole 24 mole situation all over again, where you like find out this person's the mole. And then it's like, wait, why would they have helped the enemy in this way? That, you know,
yeah,
like,
it doesn't necessarily scan. But I think one thing you can say about Varys is that he has just a million balls in the air at all times.
Right.
And so he's working like 9 different plans. You know, I think the original plan,
but none attached to his body.
I think the original plan was to put Viserys, her brother, on the throne, even though he was the worst.
Right.
You know, and so, but I don't know why Varys would incite Robert to go after Daenerys. And as far as we know, he had nothing to do with her, you know, being saved. That was all Jorah's like crisis of consciousness or whatever. It doesn't track very well.
It's weird.
But what's interesting is that it's fun to be back. It's so new and exciting, but I can't remember how often it is too often for me to bring up the books. But this plan of Varys, like, because do you feel like even if something's on track, you kind of feel like you understand what Varys has been doing this whole time?
No, not really.
No?
Why do you ask?
Well, I'm just saying, and this has no bearing on the show because who knows what they're doing now. I don't know what they're doing. But Varys disappears after he puts Tyrion on a boat. He disappears, and you don't see him.
In the books, you mean?
In the books.
Wow.
He doesn't go with Tyrion on the boat. He just puts Tyrion on the boat, and he disappears forever. But Conleth Hill is so great, and Conleth Hill's dynamic with Peter Dinklage is so great that they're like, why not just keep those two together? It's better TV, and it is. So you don't get this information from Varys until way, way later. So it's interesting that they're putting it here just to free him up, I think, to do some cool off-book stuff, whatever it is he's going to do, you know?
Interesting. All right. That'll be cool. But yeah, you know, his whole the aha moment of the episode is who said it was a him, or, you know, or whatever he's, you know, whatever the exact line is.
Right.
His plan is to install Daenerys Targaryen on the throne. I think we as viewers are supposed to root for this plan.
Yeah.
But I don't know if
are
I do.
You?
I mean, she, yeah. Okay. I think, there's that saying, you know, democracy is the worst system of government except for all the others.
Uh-huh.
And I think, that's how I feel about Daenerys Targaryen ruling, you know, Westeros. She is the worst ruler except for all the others. That's kind of how I feel. I mean, look, she clearly has good intentions, but the complexities of governing are not something that she even has any desire to grasp.
But it's not – okay, so good intentions are important.
Yes.
The power that she has, the unquestionable power that she has with her dragons, and in the books it's a less cool, like, feminist, like, who said it was a she thing, and it's she's referred to, like, when Tyrion asks that question, the answer he gets is a three-headed dragon. Like, that's the forceful answer he's given. It's like, not a person, a three-headed dragon. And that's what Dany is. And so she's got this, like, iron, you know, it's what Tywin Lannister had, this iron fist to rule the kingdom, which you need that show of strength. And then what Varys wants to do, according to this episode, is install Tyrion as her advisor. That's the dream team.
Right.
Dany has good intentions. She will listen to good advice. She just doesn't
sometimes.
Always get.
Okay. Sometimes.
Sometimes. She's got the forcefulness that she needs to rule. And if she listens to Tyrion, that would be a great team, in theory.
In theory. In theory.
Right? Don't you think?
Yeah. I agree. Firstly, she doesn't even take the advice of those, like, around her on a regular basis. And, you know, she said in this episode, like, I am not a, what was it? I'm not a ruler. I'm queen, or something like that. Right. Like, she doesn't seem to have any concern for, you know, rules and regulations, which is not, you know, that's what makes, oh, I'm not a politician. I'm a queen. That's what she said. Right.
Right.
And that's cool. That makes her really appealing, but I don't know that you know, the last person we saw with like uncompromising morals ended up with his head cut off. You know what I mean?
Right. And that's why Tyrion's a better hand of the king than Ned Stark ever was. Tyrion is a great, the best hand of the king we saw. Jon Arryn might have been good. We don't know. But like, well, we do know. But like, Tyrion was the best because he understands the game. He understands how to play it. He'll never rule himself. You need a beautiful dragon queen to rule. And Tyrion is the brains behind the operation. Whether or not Dany would cede that power to Tyrion, like let him be the brains of the operation, I don't know.
Right. But nothing in the show has said that she would. Right.
You know, I mean, like occasionally, like if he earns her trust, if he shows her, she just hasn't had a consistent advisor who, you know, she's, who she can trust. Right. Like Jorah, she feels betrayed her. And right. So I just don't feel like she's been given the opportunity to form that relationship with someone whose advice she can trust and listen to. But I also agree with you that she still also is headstrong and impetuous.
Yes.
And not the smartest when it comes to politics.
So. Well, let's talk about Meereen.
Okay.
So we cut to Meereen, and there's this massive, you know, really impressive sequence that was in the trailer for Game of Thrones Season 5. And I didn't know the trailer made it seem like a culmination, like a climax.
Right.
But in fact, it's like the first scene of Meereen, we're toppling over a symbol of the old government. Which is something that people do in real life. Like they take these symbols of dictatorships and topple them over and destroy them. Very well done. And I just thought it was a nice touch that they built all these little wooden ramps.
I know.
It's like, you do not want to be on wooden ramp duty. Let me just put it that like, you do not want to be building that, okay? Because that is freaking dangerous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just kept thinking, man, who are all the unsullied or newly freed slaves who had to build, who like drew the short straw on that job? That's tough.
Yep.
Probably like dozens of people die just getting that thing off the roof. And then we meet an unsullied. Now, I got to tell you, my very first reaction was, did they replace the actor who plays Grey Worm? Because we have this unsullied, and it's like, wow, here's a big entry for this guy. And, you know, he looks vaguely ethnic. And I didn't know if like they were replacing Grey Worm. But, of course, we find out later that's not the case. Have we met this character before? I don't think so, right?
No.
Yeah, but he has this big entrance.
Yeah.
And then he goes down, you know, open breast alley and finds like...
Oh, that's my favorite alley in Meereen. It's really picturesque.
Nudity commentary this episode. Let's do it quickly, John Robinson. We got a few boobs, but we also got a whole lot of male ass this episode.
We did, and we don't need to have the debate of, like, do boobs equal male ass or whatever.
We're not
like,
going to have that debate. But
let's not talk about it. But I will say that, and we'll get to this a little later, but the sex position that Game of Thrones is so famous for, the sex position in this episode, the two instances, were male nudity focused.
Yeah.
So that is true.
Good on Game of Thrones for bringing it back.
Yeah,
way to bring the male back, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes, way to bring the man ass.
You stepped over my brilliant... joke.
I'm sorry. Johnson. We can re-record.
Nope. We're leaving it in. So anyway, great scene here where, you know, all this unsullied wants is a little bit of affection.
Right.
He just wants a little bit of this woman singing to him while bare-chested.
Try a little tenderness.
And who doesn't want that, even if whether or not you have genitals, who doesn't want that? Mm-hmm. Great shot where it's like a long continuous shot. It kind of closes in on his face, and then in that same continuous shot, his throat gets cut.
Yeah.
Really shocking. Like, did it surprise you, or did you know it was going to happen?
No. Well, I mean, it's in the books. And Unsullied goes to the brothels and ends up dead because of the Sons of a Harpy. So it's not exactly done the same way. So I think the way it was shot, the way that Slovis and his DP or whatever shot it, it was surprising.
Right.
It was viscerally upsetting. And especially when the son of the Harpy and then the prostitute both stand up and like look down at him.
Right. And she has like blood all over her chest and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like this thing that was used to sexually entice you is now something, you know, a tableau of horror, essentially.
Yeah.
Really good stuff. So then the Sons of the Harpy are the ones doing the killing?
Yeah.
So who are these guys? Do we know? I didn't really get a good sense of who they were. They were just people from the old regime?
Right. So if you want a really, really in-depth, detailed explanation that's probably more technical than you need, more book knowledge than you could ever use, you can go to vulture.com, and Nate Jones wrote a post, something that's called like Who Are the Sons of the Harpy or something, you know, one of those very useful internet things. So you can get the entire backstory, which you probably will not need. All you need to know is that these are people who are upset with how Danny has changed the city. Their faces are hidden, so you don't know if they're nobles, you don't know if they're common born, but it's probably a mixture of the two, because we see this prostitute, like, she's one of the, you know, people who should be grateful to have been liberated by Danny in theory, and she's in cahoots. So, you know, suffice it to say that people are not happy with what Daenerys has done. And, you know, I wanted to talk briefly when we had this big debate back at the end of season three, and my hands were tied and I couldn't talk about it. But, you know, that shot that we discussed and a lot of people discussed at length of Dany being lifted up by this sea of like brown people, and she's this white savior and it's this whole thing. And a lot of people were really unsettled by it and unsettled by Dany's whole arc of this white savior. But what I couldn't say then, what I can say now, is that it's not – that's supposed
to be problematic.
It's not
as black and white, so to speak.
Well, it's supposed to be a problem. It's supposed to be that Dany doesn't get it. And she's like, you know, fuck your traditions. We're going to do it my way. And she doesn't understand that that doesn't work necessarily. And so this is the, you know, blowback from that attitude, that white savior attitude that, you know – for all her good intentions, she has.
So. Right. No, fair point. Fair point. So then, like, let's just talk about the whole Dany storyline rather than jumping around, and say that later on, speaking of traditions, people say, like, reopen the fighting pits. She's not cool with it. But she does appear to listen to reason when she is... So I had like almost forgotten that they were sleeping together. I didn't know if that was like a one-time thing or if they're still like regularly sleeping together. And apparently they're like a thing, kind of, probably not publicly. Her and Arya.
I believe he is her side piece, as the children say.
As the kids say. As the kids say, her side piece.
Yeah.
But she doesn't have a main piece, right? She's just – that's just it for her.
Right.
And so, yeah, he kind of – talks about, like, firstly, I thought he talked about a couple of different, he conflated a two different things in this scene, John Robinson. We get a nice shot of his ass,
yes,
which is very, very glorious.
Much appreciated.
And then he starts talking about how he made his way up the fighting pits. And actually, honestly, it reminded me of the plot line of Gladiator, the Ridley Scott film.
Yeah.
Basically, like, oh yeah, I worked my way, I used to be nothing, I used to be a slave, worked my way up. And, you know, became who I am today. And then, so I thought the conclusion was going to be, oh, therefore reopen the fighting pits, like show your strength by showing that you respect people's traditions. But then he just goes into the whole, like, people want to see your dragons thing, which I thought was like a fairly, I didn't know how that connected to what he was saying before. Do you know what I mean?
You don't think he was just saying, this is a show of strength for you, like reopen the fighting pits because people will like it because of the tradition. And it's actually a show of strength to give them this concession.
I thought that's what you're saying. I thought that's
what you're saying. And also put your dragons on there and that'll make it seem even stronger for you. Mm. Show them your biggest weapon in these fighting pits.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I thought
that's what he said in the scene.
I didn't make the connection. I guess I just didn't track that was what he was trying to say, especially because the scene right afterwards, where she goes to visit her dragons, it's not 100% clear that like that is a good course of action for her. I mean, I think we're meant to take is that the dragons are uncontrollable or not easy to control.
Yeah, unruly.
Unruly. Yeah. So I guess like you know the part about reopening the fighting pits seemed like good advice, juxtaposed with you know, murky advice about bringing back the dragons, which...
Well, it kind of ties back into what I was saying about one of Dany's biggest assets as a ruler is the fact that the dragons are her show of strength. She's got the Unsullied, that's true, though they're being sort of picked off by these sons of harpies, but the dragons are her real, you know, they're her WMDs, as we've, I think, referred to them as on the show before. And the fact that Drogon is missing and she's got two of them chained up because she, you know, she, like there was those little children's bones at the end of last season. That weakens her position considerably. And so Dario isn't wrong that she needs to bolster up her power by, and that the dragons are her best chance of doing so.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, I didn't track for me, but that is true of a lot of things in the show. So fair enough. But any other thoughts on Daenerys' storyline this episode?
Really quickly, I want to say that there is a new person on her small council. I don't know if you noticed that, but
Mos Eador.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you recognize him?
No.
Yeah. No reason that you should, but that that guy was when Grey Worm infiltrated Meereen last season, like went in through the sewers and freed all the slaves in Meereen, and that's how they overtook the city. Mos Eador was in there sort of talking to the fellow slaves, being like, we should follow Daenerys.
Yeah.
So it's that's that guy. And so basically Dany has put him on her small council, basically in place of Jorah. He's a little bit of local flavor, I guess, on her council.
Cool. Yeah. So. Yeah. So she can listen to, you know, the will of the people, but just not necessarily certain wills of the people.
I guess so. Yes.
John Robinson, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Let's say you're Daenerys Targaryen.
Yeah.
Okay. You. Let's say also the internet existed back then.
Yeah. And
you wanted to get your ideas out there in a really easy and compelling way. In order to do this, obviously, step one, got to buy a domain name, right?
Yeah. I mean, forget sending a raven.
Yeah, I mean, why would you send a raven if you could buy a domain name?
Yeah.
Here's the problem, though, Jenna Robinson. Most domain registrars suck because they try to upsell you on this stuff. And Daenerys, you know, they try to say, do you want all this other stuff that you don't need? And they make their websites really difficult, and they may have objectionable advertising practices. And, you know, you ask yourself, like, okay, look, Daenerys Targaryen, she's not going to stand for any of that stuff, right?
No.
She will want a really convenient, easy experience. And for that reason, I think that Daenerys Targaryen would choose Hover.com. Now, I have nothing to back that up, but I suspect that she would because I use Hover.com.
And you fancy yourself like a Mother of Dragons?
That's right. I do fancy myself quite a bit, Jenna Robinson. If you go to Hover.com/KingBeyond, you get 10% off your first order. And Hover.com is a really great way to secure a domain name in a hassle-free, frictionless environment that doesn't try to upsell you, doesn't try to do all this crazy stuff to you. It's just really freaking easy to use. In less than 5 minutes, you can find the domain name you want and get it up and running. And also, I want to put this out, like on a personal note, they have like really cool domain names. Like, for example, Jenna Robinson, we used to do a Breaking Bad podcast.
We did.
Called The Ones Who Knock.
We did.
We may again one day. We may again.
Could happen.
I stupidly, did not renew that domain name, theoneswhoknock.com. So someone else snatched it away. Instead, I bought another domain name from hover.com, bettercallsaul.audio. Now, a lot of people will think, wait, what? .audio? That's a domain name? Yeah, it is. And you can buy .audio and many other cool domain extensions at hover.com. Again, use promo code hover.com/, what is it again, John Robinson?
King Beyond.
King Beyond. Okay, I keep worrying that like it's like King, you know, North of the Wall or something like that. But it's actually just hover.com/KingBeyond. And you will get 10% off your first order. So I think we can all agree, John Robinson, that is a, you know, someone like Daenerys would want a really expedient way of getting what she wants.
I think you have to ask yourself, WWDD, what would Dany do?
Right.
And go to hover.com, right?
Exactly. Hover.com/KingBeyond.
Yeah.
So all that being said, we really appreciate hover.com backing our show this year. And here's the thing, John Robinson. There are so many amazing supporters of Cast of Kings. They also include our listeners. And even though we have amazing corporate sponsors this year, they wanted to back us anyway on Kickstarter.com. And in return, we promised that we would read/butcher their names on the show. So who do we want to thank this episode for backing us on Kickstarter, Joanna?
Okay, I'm going to start us off with Brock Wilbur, Brent Lindquist, Pete Asik, Amanda Rose, Brandon Tate, Alex Marl, Mason Williamson, Mike Vecchio, Hector Leal, John Hodor, Hydeman, Angus Ho, Joe Shannon, and Nitzar Babul. And yeah. Thank you guys so much.
I think that Alexander is Alexander Morel, by the way, I should point out. Because I think he's a frequent cast.
He is, and I thought it was Merle. I swear we've done this before.
It's so awkward when you pronounce someone's name like one way for a really long time, and you like interact with them, and then later on you find out that it's pronounced a whole different way.
Yeah, you know? I guess. I mean, I recognized Alex's name right away because he used to do like the longer sponsorship with us. I just thought I knew how to pronounce his name. Well, so, Alex, let us know if I butchered it or if Dave is correcting me unnecessarily.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank Trevor Scholler, June St. James, Josh Parham, Connor Griffin, Kelly Beam. That's Beam with an M. Emily and Ethan Choi.
Choi.
Yeah, okay, that's a weird spelling of Choi. Cloderic Mars. I'm convinced that's not a real name. Marty Schmuder, Richard Barley, JT, Jamie Barker, Danny and Megan Mann, who are married now.
Congrats!
Kate Rarick. Wow, I had a much harder time with my list than you. But thank you, guys. Thanks to Hover.com/KingBeyond. And thanks also to all of our Kickstarter backers for letting us continue Cast of Kings this season. All right. A couple more plot lines to get to this episode, General Robinson. Let's see. Let's get to all the minor episodes and then the minor plot lines and then conclude with the wall plot line. So we go to the Vale where we find Sansa and Littlefinger and Robin, who is comically bad at fighting. And
he's just as good at fighting as he is at anything else in his life.
Correct. So when we last left off, Littlefinger had whisked away Sansa to the Vale for her protection, right?
Right, right.
And then now they're going off to someplace even farther away where they can never be found. Anything about this plotline that you think is worth mentioning other than that they're just going far away?
Let's see. Oh, yeah, I guess, once again, I'll bring up the books and say that Sansa's plot is really boring in the books. So the show has decided, screw that. We're going to send her off on an adventure. So I have no idea I have some ideas what's happening to Sansa, but no book-related idea of what's happening to Sansa. We could have been subjected to a season of her hanging out with Robin in the Vale, and they're obviously not going to do that. And that for that, we can be grateful to HBO. So this is a way in which HBO is improving, or Weiss and Benioff are improving on George R. R. Martin's dumb Sansa plot. So
in the book,
hooray.
In the book, did Brienne and Pod, like, were they right there when Sansa's carriage passed?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh, that was just a show flourish.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So we meet Brienne and Pod, and they have, like, you just find out how dysfunctional their relationship is. And
didn't you miss them, though?
Yeah. Yeah, I did miss them. I mean, Brienne says, like, I'm not, here's my, the roller coaster of emotions I went through. Brienne saying, I'm not a leader, which in any conventional TV show or film, that would set up a plot line for that person becoming a leader, right?
Sure.
But in Game of Thrones, we know she'll probably become agonizingly close to being a leader before being brutally killed. That's kind of my prediction of what's going to happen based on that scene. It is kind of weird that, you know, Pod was one of, you know, the ways he was introduced was very diligent, attentive, and competent. And that now he's basically being rendered incompetent by Brienne. I mean, she puts him down. I'm guessing it's probably setting him up for like a hero moment where he proves his value. So that's my thoughts on that scene.
Well, I feel like Pod has constantly proved his value. He's just, he's not like a seasoned fighter. And I don't think he ever has been, but, you know,
I think he has not done anything for Brienne at all. I mean, if you watched the season finale of season 4, he is completely useless in that episode.
Fair.
You know? So. So I think he'll have a chance to prove his value to Brienne, and that'll be a nice story arc for him. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to say about Brienne and Pod, or shall we move on?
I mean, you know, they didn't get to do a lot this episode, obviously, right. But I just, they're a pair that I like. I like them together. And I love Gwendolyn Christie so much. So she can just like, you know, angrily glower at her sword and, you know, rant about things as long as she wants to. I'll watch it.
She's great. She's great. So then we go to Tywin's wake. A few things happen here. Firstly, amazing shot where it's like right on Cersei's face and Loras is talking to her. And yeah. There's just so little concern that Cersei has for whatever the hell Loras is saying.
Yeah.
It is amazing way of showing disdain. Like she's just in the foreground in focus. Loras out of focus for virtually the entire shot. Great work there. And so firstly, I want to say that this is an instance where the previously on Game of Thrones definitely did some spoiler action.
Did it show Lancel and Kevin or at least Lancel?
Well, it showed Lancel like, you know, giving the wine to Robert.
Uh-huh.
And so it's like, why would they show this thing from like 4 years ago?
Right.
Unless they were going to like pay it off this episode. So yeah, they showed that. And I was like, okay, they're probably going to pay that off. Because we'd always suspected, and by we, I mean me, and you probably knew that Lancel wasn't.
I thought you argued with me that it wasn't clear. And I was like, it's pretty clear that that's what happened, that Lancel put drugs in.
I think it was ambiguous.
Okay.
At the very least.
And now it's clarified.
And now it's clear.
Yeah.
There was a great shot where Cersei looks at Tommen and Tommen like looks longingly at Margaery, and you know that was just that the whole dynamic of that playing out. That's just amazing, you know,
yeah.
Because Tommen's an adolescent, probably very taken with Margaery, because who wouldn't be?
Who wouldn't be?
Who wouldn't be? She's a very beautiful woman,
mm-hmm.
And there's just this like. I think the rage has shifted to resignation for Cersei. You know, like you don't sense like she's super angry. She's just kind of like, oh, well, that's the way it is. You know, I'm sure she's going to plot some kind of revenge plot. You know, there's some fight in her left. But, you know, it was just very, very kind of resigned and low key for her. Then Lancel comes up to her and says, you know, I've found he's born again. He's the show's equivalent of born again Christian.
He is. Yeah.
And he apologizes for tempting her into their unnatural cousinly relationship, which, you know, given that she's already born children from her brother, like that's one of the least bad things she's done.
That was the tip of the incest berg.
Yes. Thank you for that imagery. And also apologize, you know, like basically fesses up that they drugged Robert Baratheon hoping that something terrible would happen to him.
Right.
I'm a different person now. I found peace in the light of the Seven. You can too. They watch over all of us, ready to dole out mercy or justice. Their world is at hand. I will pray for your father's soul.
The day Tywin Lannister's soul needs your help.
So, I thought this is I guess I feel like if we don't see Lancel again, this is a very weird thing to introduce 4 years later. So I'm expecting that Lancel's going to play a part in this season. Otherwise, why reintroduce him just to pay off those seemingly very minor storylines that we haven't seen in 4 years? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you don't have to say anything, but that's just my feeling about it.
I shan't.
Anything else to say about the scene?
We also saw Kevin Lannister, who's Lancel's father, who we haven't seen since season 2. He was in a handful of episodes of season 1. Last time we saw him was at Harrenhal with Tywin and Arya, etc. So we haven't seen him for a while. And this is a great instance where they could have recast the actor. You know, they do that all the time where an actor goes away for a couple seasons and they're like, new actor! But they use the same one, which I really liked. You know, he's Tywin's brother. So, you know, what I'll say, I don't think this is a spoiler. This is just like politics. There's a power vacuum in King's Landing right now because Tywin Lannister is dead. And, you know, Tywin may not have been the king, but he was basically the king. And he's dead. And, you know, Jaime and Cersei talk about this. The vultures are circling. And what Jaime says is like, everyone out there wants what we have. And so, you know.
What is he referring to?
Everyone outside the Sept. Everyone who's not them. So, you know, the Tyrells, the other Lannisters.
He's referring to their power, you're saying, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
wants, you know, he said, you know, our father built this for us to have. This is ours.
Right.
But now it's in peril because he's dead and he was the one holding it together.
Right.
So what are we going to do, basically? You know, so these other Lannisters are showing up. The Tyrells are in play. You know, there's just like there's a huge power shift going on in King's Landing right now. So we'll see how it all turns out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Well, that brings us to the next scene, which I have to say. So we see Loras and Olivar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we, some male nudity here. We get a nice glance of Olivar's behind before he exits the door. It sounds like I'm very fixated on the male nudity, but I just want to point out it's because we point out all the female nudity. We might as well do the same for the male nudity.
Sure thing.
And I have to say, I just did not understand what was going on in the scene. I mean, I understood that Loras and Olivar were like, you know, gay lovers and stuff. And I got that part. And I got that Margaery saying you should be less, open and out with that. I get that. That all makes sense. But what was that whole thing about, like, you know, you think I want my brother married to who? And like that, if I'm married to so-and-so, then that means you'll get to do this. Like, can you explain this for me? Because I just didn't follow it.
Okay, so Loras is engaged to Cersei.
Yes.
Right? And this is something that Tywin arranged. And so she's saying, well, now that Tywin's dead, you don't have to marry Cersei. It's great. And he's like, you want me to marry Cersei? She's like, why would I want you to marry her? She's awful. And he says, if I marry her, she has to come home with me to Highgarden. She doesn't get to stay here, King's Landing. She has to come with me. And you don't want your crazy queen mother-in-law here. You want her at Highgarden with me.
Right. Okay.
You know? And yeah. So he's like, if she doesn't marry me, you're going to be stuck with her forever. And then Margaery goes, we'll just see about that.
Right. Right. So, like, maybe there's another way for me not to be stuck with Cersei forever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see.
So these are, this is once again the power shift. The other thing I wanted, I teased some sex position. I don't think this is a spoiler. I'm just going to say it.
Okay, here we go. You're taking my life into your hands here. Let's go.
No, I don't think so. Oliver mentions that Loras's birthmark looks like Dorne, which is where Oberyn's from.
Right.
That has a role to play this season. And so it was like a weird...
Dorne does?
Yeah. So it was like a weird moment to be like, hey, Dorne is a place. Here are some of its landmarks, like via this birthmark on Loras's thigh. So it was like a weird little bit of sex position that they used to remind us all that Dorne is a place that exists. So.
Right. And, you know, we still haven't seen the consequences of what happened. There's a bunch of... You know, let's talk at the end about all the plot lines last season that we haven't picked up on yet. So
yeah, there you go.
All right, and the last plot line here is Stannis at the wall. You know, last season Stannis like took over the wall, took control, got control of all the wildlings in Mance Raider. Tries to get Jon Snow to convince Mance to bend the knee, and Mance, in any other show, Mance would see the right, or not any other show, but some other shows, he would see the how that's a better course of action, how everyone would benefit more if he did, but. It's Game of Thrones, so of course he doesn't agree.
Then bend the knee and save your people.
They followed me because they respected me, because they believed in me. The moment I kneel for a Southern king, that's all gone.
And how many tens of thousands are out there right now? How many women? How many children? And you won't go out and rescue them because why? You're afraid of looking afraid.
Oh, I am. Afraid. No shame in that.
Jon Snow, in defiance of Stannis's and Melisandre's wishes, shoots Mance in the chest.
Yeah.
So, and I love that because it's like, what are you going to do? Like, he's dead. You were going to kill him anyway. You just killed him slightly faster. So it's, you know, I do wonder if he'll be reprimanded, but it's like, well, really? Like, you just killed him slightly faster, right? Like, it's not like he saved him, for instance. So there's a few interesting things to point out about this whole sequence of events. Number one, that kid who killed Ygritte is back.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that.
Firstly, I just want to say that is, you know, of the 90% of things that Dave Chen says incorrect, that kid is in the 10% of things that I predicted correctly.
It's true.
Which is that he would come back, he would kill Ygritte, and like that would be a major plot point. But what were you going to say? You were going to ask me about what?
Well, and I told you last season that he was completely invented by the show. Like, Roz was, you know, rest in peace, Roz the prostitute. But, like, so he is now a narrative device that Weiss and Benioff can use to plug in wherever they want. I don't know what they're going to do with him because he's not, you know, a book character. So my question to you, Dave Chen, that I'm asking because I don't know, what do you think is Ollie's future? What do you think is going to happen with him?
I think, unlike Sam, who is John's friend, he'll, like, John can actually, like, train him up to be kind of his apprentice of sorts. I don't think John has had an apprentice thus far. I mean, he's had his friends. Gren, right? As that was one of his colleagues from last season.
Yeah, Gren and Ed and Pip and Sam. Yeah. A lot of his friends died, so he does need, like, replacement friends.
Right, he needs replacement friends. And like, one that he can actually, like, be an apprentice as opposed to, like, a clumsy friend.
Right, and John himself was in the apprentice to
Mormont, right?
Mormont, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, that would be an interesting sort of cyclical.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see how that plays out. Melisandre in the elevator being like, yo,
are you a virgin?
Are you a virgin? And he's like, nope. And she's like, good. What the hell was that about? I mean, I assume that, like, there was that one season where, like, she had to use leeches on, what's his name, Gendry?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so, like her leeches potency, you know, may have to do with the sexual proclivities of the person they're taking blood from.
They do love penis blood. I don't know.
You know, like, yeah. Yeah, like, so at some point, like, maybe his virginity is going to come into play with one of her spells, is my guess.
Mm.
So that's my prediction.
Okay.
And then anything else about this? I mean, curious what's going to happen with the wildlings now that Mance Rayder is dead.
Yeah.
So
can I say something?
Go, please.
So hopefully the show isn't running too long, but did you see the story? I know you're pretty good at protecting yourself from, like, show related stories, but did you see the headline that George R. R. Martin said that they were going to be killing people in the show that they didn't kill in the books?
I did see that. And I think you spoke out against that because that's something that's been done for all the seasons.
Right. I just found a lot of the brouhaha around it annoying.
Right.
Oh yeah. We talked about this in the last episode. Sorry.
We did.
Okay, so Mance Rayder is one of those characters. So that's our first one. He doesn't die in the books. Or rather, someone dies in his place. Someone is, like, glamored to look like him and dies in his place. It's very complicated. It's great that they changed their mind. This is much better. I work for a website called VanityFair.com. I read your reviews, people, and the number one negative review about me is that I mention what website I work for too much. So from here on out, I'm just going to say I wrote about this, and you guys will know where to look. So I wrote about this, about Mance Rayder's death. How
Wait,
it's
you read reviews, like, of the podcast, you're saying?
Yeah.
And the people complain about you.
They were like, Joanna wishes she was just writing her column on VanityFair.com all the time, which I don't, you guys. Like,
Okay. I have a few thoughts.
Okay.
I have a few thoughts. Firstly, why are you reading the reviews? Okay. You shouldn't do that, even though I know you can't resist. Number two, I will mention Vanity Fair from now. Like, people, if you don't mention it, Jonah Robinson, I am going to now say Jonah Robinson from Vanity Fair all the time, which I know people will love because they love me saying your full name.
No, yeah, that's like a double negative. The reason I mention it is, like, if there are people who listen to this who also read what I write, I don't want them to think that I'm saying, like, I'm not aware that you probably already heard my thoughts on this if you read what I wrote last night about it. If you didn't, I want to talk to you about it. If you want to read about it further, you know where I work now. But basically, they killed Mance Rayder. You know, bummer, because I think we both agree that that actor, Cyrion Hines, who's great, has kind of been wasted on the show. Do you remember that, like, they cast him, he showed up, and then he disappeared for a long time?
What
is going on?
He had a great line about, like, I'm going to light the biggest fire the Earth has ever seen, and that's it. And then he came back, and that was it.
Yeah. So they never, you know, made that character work. And so I think they just decided to get rid of him.
Mm.
This is, like, you know, show book departure. But I think it's great, because wasn't this a great moment for Jon? In the book, there still is a moment where Jon, like, orders some archers to put the guy who's supposed to look like Mance Rayder out of his misery. But that's so complicated and unnecessary.
Right.
And isn't it more poignant that it's actually Mance Rayder, this character that Jon has bonded with, seeing him in pain, and then John takes a shot himself, and then then the episode ends on a hero shot of Jon Snow. And Jon Snow, in my opinion, needs all the hero shots he can get, because he...
People hate Jon Snow. I don't know why. I thought his season two plotline was a little bit weak, but I've actually been a fan of him the last two seasons. So
I thought season four went a long way towards rehabilitation.
Yeah. I am now a fan of Jon Snow. I don't know why people hate him so much. So I think
Kit Harington took a while to get into the role. I think for book readers especially, Jon Snow is a young boy, and so a lot of the plots weren't really fitting.
Right.
So I think eventually the show figured that out and was like, okay, since Kit Harington is obviously not a child, we need to change his plot a little bit to make him seem even more badass. So it's not like, oh, look at this kid accomplishing this stuff. It's like, look at this grown-ass man doing some heroic stuff.
Right.
So, I think they figured that out. I think they're working on that. I think this particular change is great and goes a long way towards making Jon Snow into, a convincing, commanding, heroic type, right?
Yeah, totally.
So, yeah, so that's, and in the past, inaccurately, I don't mean this for this to be like the Joanna Robinson gets defensive hour, but I think in the past people have mistaken my interest in the adaptation of the books as being a book purist, as thinking that the books are gospel. And I don't. And especially now that we're in the fourth and fifth books, which I think are pretty weak, I applaud all the things the show is doing to tighten things up and make them more dynamic. So this is one of them.
I would watch a TV show called The Joanna Robinson Defensive Hour. That's a good – if you ever have a talk show.
On PBS.
Yep. That's it. C-SPAN 3, actually.
Okay.
Is what I'd be on. All right. So I think that takes us to the end of this week's episode, John Robinson, from Vanity Fair. So I think let's – firstly, we should mention what was excluded in this episode, right? What we didn't see. We didn't see any of Arya, which is a shame because that was intense. Like what was going to happen with that?
Yeah.
We didn't see any of Theon.
Right.
Which is also interesting. I'll be honest. I just don't remember what the situation was with Gendry and Mormont at this point. Weren't they on a boat? If I recall correctly,
Gendry has been, or no, Jorah was, last time we saw him, he was riding away from Dany looking really sad.
Yeah.
And then last time we saw Gendry was like season three, I think.
Oh, okay.
When he got into a boat.
Yeah.
And the still in a boat thing comes because the actor tweeted something at the end of last season being like, he tweeted like still rowing because like he didn't show up at all last season.
Right.
So I think that's why people joke that Gendry's still in a boat.
So is there anything, any other plot lines that weren't brought up this episode?
Oh gosh, I'm sure, but I can't. Well, I mean,
I guess the Bran storyline.
Yeah, we didn't see. I was about to say.
It didn't even occur to us to bring that up.
And Rickon, who we haven't seen in forever,
And I guess theoretically, like what's going on with the Boltons, like that is now its own story.
People at Winterfell,
right, because they show Winterfell in the opening credits, but we never go there.
Stannis does talk about it.
Right.
Talks to John about how, Roose Bolton, the man who plunged a knife into Robb Stark, is now sitting at Winterfell, and what are we going to do about that? So
we've talked about, how the show like has never really been really closely adhering, the opening credits with what actually happens in the episode. So we won't harp on that again. But I am curious what's going on at Winterfell. So overall, what do we think of this episode, Jenna Robinson?
So I've heard people complain that it was boring and nothing happened. I don't know. I think it was even more dynamic than some of the other season openers have been. Because I think in the past, season openers have felt the need to check in on everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was wise for them to cut someone. I mean, maybe it shouldn't have been Arya, or maybe so. Well, time will tell. But
could we have gotten Arya instead of Brienne and Pod? Maybe.
But overarching themes that I want to talk about are people in boxes. This is a weird theme, but Sansa and Littlefinger are in their carriage. Cersei's in a litter, Tyrion's in a box. So this is just sort of like this confinement, this claustrophobia theme that I think we saw a little bit in this episode. And then the power of of a name, because Littlefinger says that thing to, well, he says it about a Robin. He says, you know, the Lord Royce of the Vale says, you know, Robin is useful at swordplay. What is he going to be? And Littlefinger's like, he's got a name. That's all he needs. He's got the last name Aaron. It's a very powerful name. It means something. But he's kind of looking at Sansa when he says it. And Varys says a similar thing about Daenerys, that she has the right name to rule. So just this idea of these, even though the deck has shuffled a lot in this game, the names are still important. Stark, Lannister, Targaryen, these are still very important names, and they mean something. Because it hasn't been that long since the, even though it's been like years since we started watching the show, it hasn't been that long in Showtime since Robert Baratheon was on the throne. So,
yeah, I would say it's a very solid season premiere. It's not my favorite season premiere out of all the season premieres.
Do you know what your favorite is?
I would surmise, if I had to put down a guess right off the top of my head, I would say it's probably the pilot, which I thought functioned as like almost a conventional film. It's in and of itself. Season three also probably is one of my, you know, more preferred premieres, Game of Thrones season three, episode one. It's not my favorite out of the premieres, but it's, I would say it's definitely solid.
And I think
definitely very strong.
I think we know that Game of Thrones needs a couple episodes to get all the pieces in place. I feel like people complained last year about season four not being very interesting until Dany like unleashed her dragons on, Astapor, I think it was, or wherever, you know, like,
right.
Or Yunkai, like, you know, like Dany and her like drop the mic, drop the whip moment was when people got really excited about season four. That wasn't until episode four. So, you know, give it some space to build to, and then we know that it's like, you know, probably a bloodbath as it is every season.
We'll see. I think the biggest challenge, in my opinion, for the show is that Tyrion was the closest thing the show had to a protagonist, and now he's scattered to the winds. Right. And I just think it's going to be very difficult for the show to maintain a feeling of momentum without Tyrion like kind of in play. That being said, the poster for the season is very spoilery and shows Tyrion, like the poster is Tyrion encountering dragons. So we know at some point he's probably going to make it to Dany, or at the very least make it to the dragons. So like maybe that will be the journey of the season, is like watching what Tyrion does and kind of we're still with him even though he's not in King's Landing.
I agree with you that Dinklage is definitely, you know, one of the most dynamic performers on the show, but he was kind of, you know, he was confined for half of last season. I think season three was really, you know, Tyrion's season two, season three were really Tyrion's, moments.
I don't agree with that, but continue.
Okay. And then I think some people, like, I think your mileage may vary. I think there are some people who consider Arya the protagonist of the show, or some people who are
right,
crazy
the
and
show,
consider
who they didn't even show this episode.
Right, you know right. I mean? So. Or some people consider Jon or Dany.
Right.
I mean, I agree with you that I think that Tyrion is the most interesting character, but I think other people have a different sense of how they watch the show, or maybe all of them pieced together combined. But it's also true that you pay the price of brutally murdering a lot of your characters.
Right.
And
also not only brutally murdering a lot of your characters, but continuously subverting common, you know, conventional narrative devices. Like, you can only do that so often until, you know, like – there's a reason why people follow those devices, right? Is because people find them satisfying. And if you don't do that, then you better have something really compelling in its place. And for the most part, the show has succeeded in doing that. But also to the point about season four, I mean, even though Tyrion was in confinement, like, we still were with him. We were still rooting for him. And, I mean, he had that spectacular courtroom scene that Brian Cogman wrote. You know, so...
are you not rooting for him? I mean, I know he's like just rolled out of a box where he had to stuff his shit out of a hole and is vomiting up wine and drinking some more. But are you not still on Team Tyrion?
I am, but it's just he's so far away from like the main action of the series that I just don't know
But here's what I would argue. Yep. I feel like complaints I've heard in the past, maybe concerns from you, but maybe concerns from listeners, is that Dany feels isolated where she is, which is true.
I think that's also a legitimate complaint.
I agree. But that's my point, is that they're seeding in characters from Westeros into the Eastern regions, because we know that Arya is headed that way too, to sort of bridge the gap between these two narratives and make it more cohesive. So to send Tyrion over the Narrow Sea does take him away from the main action of King's Landing, but it also, you know, the idea of Tyrion and those dragons, like, that promises to spice up whatever's going on over there, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. I probably can't speak it anymore, but I'm certainly not making any promises, because they're going way off book, and I'm not promising, you know, in the past I'll be like, oh, just wait and see, it'll pay off. But, like, first of all, I've already said that the books aren't necessarily at their strongest right now in the series. And secondly, I have no idea what the show is going to do.
Right. And look, you're acting like I'm saying, like, the show is no good or anything. I'm just saying, like, hey, I think this is a potential problem that could come up this season. So.
Sure. But the thing I was going to say about them killing people, you pay the price of killing people off, is as you kill people off, you have to seed in new characters, right, in theory, to take their place. Like, that's in theory what an Oberyn was last season, and then he's gone now. But and the book does bring in a lot of new characters at this point that the show is not going to. Thank goodness, because the cast just keeps getting bigger and bigger, right? So I think they're trying to keep them tight and slot in existing characters into new characters' places, and hopefully then make those existing characters even more complex and interesting. And I think it'll make for a stronger narrative overall. And I think then we'll see these other characters that you don't consider as much of a protagonist as Tyrion slide into that role a bit more, whoever they may be.
All right. Well, we shall see. I think that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of A Cast of Kings. I'll tell you where you can find my work. I host another podcast called Big Problems, which is an advice podcast I do with an actor named Stephen Tobolowsky. Check that out at bigproblemspodcast.com. Joanna Robinson from Vanity Fair, where else can we find your stuff?
If you want to hear me talk about spoilers even more than you feel I talked about on this week's episode, I'm co-hosting a Game of Thrones spoiler podcast called A Storm of Spoilers, which you can find on iTunes with Neil Miller from Film School Rejects and Dave Gonzalez from Geek.com. And, you know, there we talk about all kinds of book spoilers. We're not going to be talking about leaked episode spoilers, but book spoilers. And you can find me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. And yeah, you can find me on that website that Dave mentioned. So.
That shall remain nameless by you, apparently. I'm going to make you regret the decision to never mention it again. Thank you guys for listening. It is great to be back. We'll see you guys next week.
Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.